Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, May 8th. And today we got the reaction from the big move by Tom Gores on Monday. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host and AP freelancer in Chicago, covering the NBA, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade. Today we're going to be refreshing where we're at with the playoffs and another coach off the board for the Pistons in the NBA. Not a name that's been linked to Detroit and not one that fans have been talking about, so I guess that's a good thing. We're going to hear from Walker Mell of the Locked On Hornets podcast to sum up the situation there and talk about their new coach from the Spurs organization. We're also going to be talking about the Stan Van Gundy firing on Monday, of course, the media reaction, just a lot of things swirling. So I'll kind of pass along all the nuggets that I've been consuming all day in terms of content and maybe a bit of a mailbag, basically, as I'll react to those nuggets. Some good times there. Send me some more fan reaction on social media or through email, and we'll do a segment later this week with what you guys think, and not the experts, so to speak, about the initial reaction. But, you know, give a day or two and think about it and let me know what you think. I've heard from some of you guys already. I want to react to some more of your comments later this week. And the Pistons playoff playback is back. Going to look back at the rise of the Bad Boys, 1988. I love talking about the championship runs and their infancies and not the downfalls. Those are kind of depressing conversation. It's the funnest time to be a fan, as I've always said, as your team is on its way up and you can see the bright skies ahead. Maybe we'll get there again with the Detroit Pistons someday. But very quickly, as we have a lot of Stan Van Gundy stuff to talk about, the Cavaliers finished off the Toronto Raptors on Monday night at a 4-0 sweep. So my Raptors 5 pick didn't hold up very well. Hope you guys are reminding me of that as we continue on in the playoffs here. I still maintain that I'm just doing some performance art with that pick to make everyone appreciate just how damn good LeBron is. It was fun watching him in Vegas over the weekend and seeing everyone react to the great plays that he made. Obviously, the buzzer beater on Saturday to get the win at home in Game 3. But obviously, the revelation of this series is how good the role players played for Cleveland. I don't know if you saw the Saturday Night Live skit that actually didn't air, but they did a little spoof of how bad the Cleveland players are. You can find it on the internet. But a poorly timed one, as those guys, maybe they saw the episode pre-production or something like that and realized it was time to step up. But I've always maintained that with role guys, they play better, especially in the playoffs at home. And let's be honest, Toronto is pretty much a home game for the Cavs and LeBron James right now. They just own that place. They own that crowd. Obviously, some big questions for the Raptors going forward. And for the 76ers, 103-92 for them. They hold on in the series against the Boston Celtics, forcing a move back to Boston for Game 5, now 3-1 in that one. T.J. McConnell played well in his first start of the series, kind of playing the Matthew Dellavedova role of the upstart white point guard from Cleveland a few years back. So I'm sure we won't hear about that much for the next couple days. But 25 from Dario Saric. Boston up 3-1. Better close Game 5 at home. Or maybe things will get weird if Philly gets a little bit momentum. I would assume that Boston takes care of business there if they can get back to their form from the first three games. But tonight, and as I post this, there won't be a lot of lead time left before the games tonight, so maybe you'll be hearing this after these games already happened. But Jazz and Rockets at 8 o'clock tonight. Rockets by 12, according to Vegas, to close the series, which they should. And then you got the New Orleans Pelicans in Golden State at 10:30. Golden State favored by 11.5. Should be a closeout there, too. Very uninteresting Western Conference semifinal matchups, as predicted by most people, including your favorite podcaster here. But big coaching news today on Tuesday afternoon, and for that, let's go to Walker Mail of Locked On Hornets.
I'm Walker Mail of the Locked On Hornets podcast. The Charlotte Hornets now have selected James Borrego as their new head coach. Again, this is coming after the Hornets had finalized a couple of head coaching candidates in the Spurs assistant James Borrego and the Celtics assistant Jay Larinaga. Again, Adrian Wojnarowski just reporting that James Borrego would be the new head coach for the Charlotte Hornets. Now, Borrego comes in having had 10 years of experience under Greg Popovich, did serve a short stint with the Orlando Magic under Jacques Vaughn, eventually taking over for him when he was let go by the Magic, and accumulating a 10-20 record as the interim head coach. Of course, Scott Skiles comes in with Orlando to become the new head coach, and Borrego goes back to the San Antonio Spurs to serve under Greg Popovich. Also served under Monty Williams for a brief stint with the New Orleans then Hornets. Monty Williams, of course, coming also from that Greg Popovich tree. So James Borrego has a little bit of head coaching experience as the interim head coach with Orlando, but also a ton of experience under what a lot of people consider to be the best coach in today's NBA and maybe of all time, and Greg Popovich. So Borrego now replaces Steve Clifford, who was fired at the end of this regular season, as Mitch Kupchak, the new general manager of the Charlotte Hornets, came in and decided Steve Clifford's fate. Mitch Kupchak, again, served a long time with the Los Angeles Lakers, about 20 years, and he is at the helm now of the Charlotte Hornets' decision-making as the general manager who now brings in James Borrego. A couple of other questions to go on with the Charlotte Hornets as what their future may look like. You do have Kemba Walker, who was rumored in some trade consideration really before the trade deadline. They held on to him then. It does not mean that he is a surefire thing to stay on this Charlotte Hornets roster. So who knows what Mitch Kupchak decides to do there. You do have, of course, Dwight Howard, who is a guy that is a big man down low that is kind of losing some value in today's NBA, but still carries a hefty contract. You wonder what kind of trading partners the Charlotte Hornets could see there. There's a lot of questions for the Charlotte Hornets team, but one that is no longer a question, they did find the answer, at least of now, and that is James Borrego, the San Antonio Spurs former assistant, now the Charlotte Hornets' new head coach. Again, thanks for listening. I'm Walker Mail on the Locked On Hornets podcast.
Thanks to Walker for that. Again, the Pistons haven't had a chance to talk to James Borrego as they obviously drug their feet on the coaching change. So who knows? Maybe James Borrego turns into the second coming of Greg Popovich, and then the Pistons have missed out on another one because of Tom Gores' indecision for a month, which has widely been panned across Pistons Nation. But other big coaching news could be that Dwayne Casey, as we mentioned with the Raptors, he might be on the chopping block, reports of that being a possibility. And he also could win Coach of the Year this year, and I would love to have him in Detroit. I might slot him on my wish list at number two behind Mike Budenholzer, and we'll take a closer look at Dwayne Casey and maybe some of those other coaching candidates as the time goes on. And we will have extended discussions about Coach Bud as time goes on as well, assuming he's still available. But I like the way he is implementing the culture. He was with the Spurs for about 10 years, I believe. That's one thing you're always reading as far as strengths and things you read about Mike Budenholzer, is the way he's implementing all of those things that the winning teams do in terms of being unselfish and following the team. I think it showed how hard the team competed this season in Atlanta as well. They were bad teams. I think if you look at Atlanta's roster, that was the single worst in the NBA, maybe by kind of a lot, too. And there was a lot of bad teams, but just not a lot of talent in Atlanta whatsoever. They played the Pistons tough. They beat Blake Griffin in Detroit on a Sunday afternoon in Atlanta as well. I was really impressed by the way that Coach Bud had that team going this year, especially defensively. And that's the kind of mindset that I think that the Detroit Pistons could try to partake in as well. Looking back, it makes sense that a bad management team like Atlanta wants to get rid of him so that they can be bad on purpose. And I think in a related topic, I don't expect Atlanta to be good anytime soon. Again, I think we're going to be talking more about Coach Bud a little bit maybe later this week or early next week. But speaking of coaches, all Stan Van Gundy all the time here after the break, the reaction, where's everyone at on it in the media? And again, I want to hear what you guys think as far as the fans too. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then this is your spot. Locked On Pistons, listened to by 98% men, 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we have reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Later on, we're going to be doing Pistons playoff playback back to 1988, since we can't live in the present with the Detroit Pistons in the playoffs. We will relive the past defiantly, looking at possible better times ahead. Although there's a lot of folks out there and a lot of folks listening out there who don't believe in it right now and really need something to kind of change your mind about the course of this confounding team. Really, I've been devouring all sorts of content about the Stan Van Gundy move today. Local media, national media, podcasts, reading articles as well. Going on Twitter and checking out some of the reaction from the experts and the fans. I got to say, an extension for Stan Van Gundy would have been very frustrating. I think probably the worst thing they could have done. And status quo would have been a little frustrating and definitely boring for content and excitement and stuff like that going forward. But I thought that this whole thing was a little bit strange with how it played out with Stan Van Gundy and Tom Gores. It seemed to be going one way for a long time. And Stan Van Gundy had some comments to both Rod Beard and Vince Ellis on Monday after the news broke. and said he was perfectly willing to give up the front office role. He had a quote saying, "Tom was looking to make change, and I was willing to make pretty significant changes, but even that wasn't going to be enough. Tom decided at the end of the day that he needed to change the structure and the leadership," Van Gundy told the Detroit News. "When it came down to this, I was perfectly willing to only go in one role and to give up the front office and go into coaching. I didn't fight or hang on to the president role at all. I was more than willing to just move over into the coaching role," end quote. Rod Beard went on to write, "Gores and Van Gundy had been in discussions for the past 3 weeks, likely to try to figure out a configuration that would allow a shakeup in the front office, but also keep Van Gundy on as head coach. When the two sides couldn't reach an agreement on what that structure looked like, it was time to move in a different direction." So it sounds to me, and that's the end of quote of Rod Beard's little paragraph there. Does that mean he basically just fell on the sword for Jeff Bauer, basically saying that, we can change the structure of the front office, but something he's not saying is he's willing to change some of the personnel, especially at the top of the front office with Jeff Bauer being the general manager. And it's kind of not really a sincere thing for Stan Van Gundy to say if he's like, yeah, I mean, we could change that structure and keep Jeff in charge. And obviously he's his close friend and a guy who's been with for a long time, guy he brought to the Detroit Pistons as well. So to say that, oh, yeah, you can just put Jeff in charge is not really in the spirit of what he's saying as far as moving over to just the coaching role. So maybe I think it simply came down to that. And Stan Van Gundy set up this unique structure when he came here 4 years ago. And then when things weren't working out, the team kind of sought to go more traditional, and he maybe refused some of those things. Then it sounds like someone maybe got in Tom Gores' ear, and things apparently changed from last week when Woj had the report on ESPN that Gores wanted Van Gundy back as coach and that Stan Van Gundy was resisting some of those structural front office changes. But like I said, something doesn't quite add up still. And, you know, is it just that simple that Tom Gores changed his mind and thought that but I think that Jeff Bauer might be kind of in between these guys, and maybe Arne Tellem convinced Tom that that Stan Van Gundy wasn't being completely genuine in quote-unquote giving up his front office responsibilities. Or maybe, you know, Stan Van Gundy is using that Jeff Bauer thing as his trip, as his chip in this public spat about, you know, what happened and what he was proposing as the way forward. I don't think, maybe he wasn't desperate to stay on anyways. He talked about that in March a little bit, as far as if it couldn't work out, he could go on his way. And he'll be collecting a check and spending a year on TV, maybe regrouping elsewhere. Bob Winowski of the Detroit News, Wojo, he didn't write about it yesterday. But to his credit, he seemed to be ahead of this a little before everyone. At the end of last week, he had a column basically saying if they couldn't get anything done by now, referring to the talks that were going on between Gores and Van Gundy, maybe it's time they part ways. I don't know if that was good intuition by Woj or good reporting, but good work from Bob there. We'll get him on the pod someday as well to get his thoughts about the team going forward. I talked about Dan Wetzel's column from Yahoo when we recorded the quick show on Monday night, but basically talking down to Tom Gores, saying this team needs a new owner who cares. I agree that this move, although pure, probably the right one and no doubt defensible for Gores to make getting rid of Van Gundy, it came off poorly, awkwardly, furthering the perception that the Pistons are pretty far down on Gores' list of concerns. But I thought it was a pretty direct and somewhat unnecessary hit from Wetzel there, who hasn't really written about the Pistons much as far as I know. And I love his work. He's great. He takes down the NCAA all the time. He gets involved. He got involved with the Aaron Hernandez case quite a bit. The gymnastics stuff, you know, some of the things that a lot of the, and I count myself among them, the non-sexy type of stories, the sitting in courtrooms, getting the nuggets and the NCAA stuff. While these are overarching kind of interesting stories, he's one to sit through some kind of the minutiae to really hammer some of these, like the NCAA for how, you know, they treat players and how the whole system is set up unfairly, and he really goes after him consistently on that. I like Dan Wetzel a lot, but I thought this was kind of awkward that he really, you know, pulled the guns out on Tom Gores without being a guy who's around the team very much. And not that you can't have an opinion if you're not a beat writer in the trenches, but it was strange to have him say that Tom Gores doesn't care about owning the Detroit Pistons. And maybe I'm being a little homerish there in defending our owner, but to say that Tom Gores doesn't care. He paid a lot of money for Stan Van Gundy to come in. He gave him 4 years and then kind of walked away from it, albeit awkwardly. And I know that Tom Gores has had some public things that don't look super professional. He's not around as much as many of you Pistons fans would hope that he was. I don't care, by the way, especially when it's a bad team. I mean, nobody goes to the games. Why would Tom Gorse go to the games when they're struggling right now? He's looking for a way to turn it around. And if they're in the playoffs, you better believe he's going to be there with a cold one in his hand, some T-shirts to throw as well. I'm not out on Tom Gorse yet. Anyone who's spending and investing in Detroit and Detroit sports is good with me until proven otherwise. And sure, the time's running out for him to prove that he can start a winning basketball culture, but things from where they were when he bought the team to where they are now certainly have improved there. Another column from John Neal of the News on Tuesday said that the pressure is now on Gorse as well. Used kind of a nice metaphor saying that they were adrift when Stan Van Gundy took over, and now they're landlocked. I kind of enjoyed those metaphors there as a writer myself. Sean Windsor of the Freep had a pretty vanilla column about how Stan Van Gundy, the general manager, killed Stan Van Gundy, the coach. Kind of a blah take, but was pretty well written. He talked about the iconic photo from the Detroit slow roll of Stan Van Gundy on the bike with the sun behind it setting. Looked like a G in that one. I like that photo. So maybe we'll get Mike Mulholland, the photographer that took that a couple years back, on the show at some point. But I think we all knew that Stan Van Gundy, as the top guy in both capacities as coach and president, I think we all knew that it was a bad idea when it happened. And I think that it was the only way you could get a type of guy like that when they were at the depths of where they were 4 years ago. And that's the same for Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota. I mean, it's Minnesota, and Tom Thibodeau was a big name coming into it 2 years ago. Sure, you had Karl-Anthony Towns there, and it was a little bit more attractive than the Pistons' future, but that's the only way you could get a big name like that in a place like Minnesota or a place like Detroit with Stan Van Gundy. Same thing with Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta. I mean, it was a leverage thing. It was a way for mid and small market teams to get guys that they couldn't otherwise get. So there's a little bit of revisionist history there, and people thinking that, oh, I think that you need to go back to the original structure and it just works out better. Well, of course it does. We all knew that even back then. It's just that was the only way for the Pistons to get a Stan Van Gundy type when they were in the bottom of where they were 4 years ago. Another column recently from Sean Windsor talked about how Luke Kennard was a worse pick than Darko Milicic in 2003. And I saw some other fans kind of alluding to takes like that as well. And there's just no freaking chance of that. Darko, who was very bad, was taken at number 2 immediately before 3 consecutive Hall of Famers. I don't know if Bosch makes the Hall of Fame. You know, it's a conversation for another day and another podcast. But Luke Kennard, on the other hand, he's at least kind of good. Was taken at 12 in front of one guy who has had one excellent season so far. So stop with that Luke Kennard was a worse pick than Darko Milicic. And you can't argue that Darko was so bad that the Pistons had to trade for Sheed, and maybe that didn't happen with Melo or Bosch on the team. You can't argue that other moves that were made to make up for how bad that pick was is an argument defending that the pick wasn't that bad, if you understand what my logic, roundabout logic was there. You can't use that as evidence that the pick wasn't that bad. Because it was so bad, here's how not bad it was. But, I mean, it's kind of in the same vein of Van Gundy picking and choosing to go to the Pistons in the first place. Like, in your job, if you could work for this big-time company with a bunch of built-in pressure, would you do that? Or if you could work for maybe a smaller mid-sized company and not have a boss, I mean, that sounds pretty good as well, right? Jeff Seidel wrote something about Gorse. I didn't read that. I listened to Jamie and Stoney on Tuesday morning. They had John Barry and David Aldridge also from TNT. Nothing too revealing, but both were resigned to the fact that this current group of players will be probably given a chance at one season together, see how it goes. I agree that that's ultimately what will happen too. But along those veins, I thought kind of against that, on the other hand, James Edwards III, the Athletic, friend of the podcast here, he had a nice little thought experiment of what a rebuild for the Pistons could look like this year and what are some of the trades that might happen. Some pretty good stuff in there. I thought you might be pretty disappointed with what he perceives as the haul for separate trades for Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, and Reggie Jackson. Some pretty eye-opening stuff. Obviously, with Reggie and Blake, the contracts that they have and the health issues they have, the value isn't really there. But with Andre, it's probably more of a market thing. But he did find some teams and put together some interesting trade proposals with the trade machine of what some things might look like. And all the fans out there who are fans of those fake trades and possible trades, I would refer you to that article too. Stepping back some nationally, Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, Kenny Smith all said on Monday night's post-game broadcast of the playoff games. They all said the Pistons should hire Isaiah Thomas as president of the team going forward. And I get that he's in their fraternity, but no thank you. I mean, he's the greatest Piston who ever lived, no doubt about that. But what in Isaiah's past, post to a basketball career, post-playing career, suggests that this is a good idea? The Knicks was a toxic situation. He struggled with the expansion of the Raptors as well, complete with not only some very unsavvy moves that he made with those front offices, most notably in New York, but also the public embarrassment with the sexual harassment stuff. And I don't know that that one case or one allegations is a disqualifier completely, especially for someone like Isaiah, who gave the Pistons so much throughout his life. But the job performance was so abysmal, it's obvious that he doesn't have the skills for this. If we're talking, you know, old players, I'd much rather see Chauncey if we're going down the former player route. Some other things from the Ringer that maybe we'll talk about tomorrow that they had as far as the national perspective. But I'm also looking for some more fan reaction as well. We'll go through some of those that you sent in to me and that you're going to send in to me after listening to this podcast. What are your thoughts on the Pistons' legacy of Stan Van Gundy, how they handled it, and who do you want to replace in the front office or the sidelines? But we're also going to be talking today about better times and Pistons playoff playback. Since we can't live in the present, we will relive in the past. You're on the Locked On Network, your team every day. Time for today in Pistons playoff playback. The Detroit Pistons made their first appearance in the NBA Finals in 1988, but they almost didn't even get there. This is another one that's before my time. I don't remember this one. But the Pistons entered the playoffs that year after the disappointing loss in the 87 Conference Finals to the Boston Celtics, entering the playoffs with the 2 seed and drew the 7th-seeded Washington Bullets in the first round. And just like 4 years earlier when he was with the New York Knicks, the Pistons would try to go through Bernard King. He was a handful during this series. Not like he was in 84 with the Knicks when the Pistons lost to him, though. But this was after the knee injuries had already begun and knocked him out for one whole season. And he was moved to Washington instead of New York after that, which derailed his career, those injuries. But still, a starter in Washington, one of their better players, along with Moses Malone, speaking of guys of the late Moses Malone, who was a very effective player very early on in his career before some injuries set in as well. Jeff Malone, who is remembered late in his career by people of my age with the Utah Jazz, with the Stockton Malone teams, kind of a third banana or maybe fourth banana on that group. But real very good scorer in his early days with the Bullets, a real star power there with that team. And I wonder what it would have happened if Bernard King and Moses Malone teamed up when they were still healthy. What a team that would have been. But the Bullets also had off the bench Manute Bol and Muggsy Bogues, both early in their careers, the tallest player in the league at that time and the shortest player in the league at that time. I know if you go online, you can find some famous pictures of them standing next to each other in their Bullets uniforms as well. But the Bullets, really, like I said, proved to be a handful. Pistons won the first 2 games at the Silverdome, but this game 2 was just by 1 point. And then the Bullets took 2 at home, forcing that game 5. Jeff Malone had 35 and 25 in those game 3 and game 4 victories. Do or die, though, coming back to the Silverdome in the first round. That's right, the Bad Boys getting to game 7 of the NBA Finals that year, almost didn't even get through game 5 of the first round series. So that takes us to May 8th, 1988, for that game 5. The Pistons did survive with a nice 99-78 route at the Pontiac Silverdome. The Bad Boys dug in on defense, holding Jeff Malone to 1 of 12 shooting and Moses Malone to 2 of 10 shooting, and the entire Bullets team to 31% shooting. Offensively, it was 20 from Joe Dumars to lead the way, 17 from AD, Adrian Dantley, 16 from Isaiah Thomas. Rodman had a good game off the bench, 21 minutes. He had 13 points and 7 rebounds, so a good game from him. The Pistons would get Jordan and the Bulls in round 2 and then the Celtics in round 3. So for the Pistons to get to play in the finals against Magic, Kareem, and Worthy, they had to go through Moses Malone, Bernard King, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, you know, Parrish and DJ and those Celtics, just so that they could play Magic and company in the finals. Unbelievable. Not exactly Victor Oladipo, DeMar DeRozan, and Terry Rozier as guys to get through to get to the finals. But hope you enjoyed that look back. Give us a follow on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check out the Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook, that page there. Give it a like, join the conversation, and give us a rating and review on iTunes as well. We'll have more Stan Van Gundy stuff as the week continues, the summer continues. We got the draft combine, the draft lottery early next week, the draft combine later next week. Both of those events here in Chicago, I'm attending the combine, so I'll have some exclusive stuff for you there for the Locked On Pistons Network. Excited for the summer now that we've got some more things to talk about, and I want to hear what you guys think. So get in touch with me. Let me know what you think about the Stan Van Gundy move and what the Pistons should do going forward. This is your host, Matt Shook, and thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you all again very soon.